Okay, we'll call to order the November 6, 2019 Planning and Zoning Commission for the Town of Kiri Beach. First agenda item is the adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion to adopt the agenda or recommend any changes?
So moved.
Okay, for the adoption, is there a second?
I second it.
Okay, it's been seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Next item is the approval of the meeting minutes for our October 7th, 2019 special meeting.
Motion to accept.
Okay. Can I ask, so okay, this is a special meeting, but when I look at the minutes, it says regular meeting.
That was your rescheduled regular meeting.
Do we have to, I guess what I'm struggling with is where's the special meeting minutes?
When the special meeting was changed?
Yeah, the special meeting was the training, I think. Or was that a regular meeting? I can't remember.
That should say regular. That's an error. So that's your regular. You already approved your special meeting.
Okay, so
that's your regular.
Okay, got it. Okay. All right, is there a motion to approve the October 7th, 2019 regular meeting minutes?
So moved.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, and second it. All in favor say aye.
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 Okay, excellent. Public comments? Okay. Hearing none, we have old business, presentation by our intern. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, that's a good thing. During the last council meeting, I talked to the council to get some feedback from the town council about the lead and see if they'd be willing to provide a little money because lead was interested in maybe $500 or $1,000. Generally, the council was positive. They asked for some additional information. I provided that additional information. So we're just waiting to hear from the council regarding that. There's a little bit of pushback from the council on two areas. One is that one of the council members felt that whenever they work with lead, it just becomes more and more expensive. And from my understanding, that's not the case here. This is not a building where you have to build by lead standard, which can be quite expensive. The other is a concern by the mayor that doing a lead certification might take a little bit too much time of the town, of the town's employees and stuff like that. So anyway, that's kind of in a hiatus. I think we'll come back and visit it, but it's certainly been, it was a good discussion and a good presentation and a set of comments. So they still might come back and be interested in having us do it maybe for 1 year, which I think would be my recommendation to see if it's something that we would want to continue. So anyway, that's the lead. And so when we were talking for tonight's presentation is, you know, considering that the lead is kind of on the back burner right now, at least for right now, what sort of other things we can be talking about in terms of the intern. Okay.
So I will just continue with that. So I, for my presentation last month, I kind of glazed over a couple of things that I was looking into. So now I'm starting to kind of compile a report, and I just wanted to highlight a couple of things that I've been looking into right now that are kind of more of a like low cost thing that could be implemented and wouldn't take as much like staff time and things like that. So this is just an overview of a couple of things I'm going to talk about. The Adopt a Beach Access Program, some tree protection, energy conservation, LED lighting, and NC Green Power, which is a nonprofit. So Wrightsville Beach has, so their Board of Aldermen appointed about 11 citizens, and they served on this ad hoc committee that was geared towards a cleaner, greener Wrightsville Beach. And so that committee created this Adopt a Beach Access program. And I don't think that committee actually exists anymore, but it kind of got rolled into their Parks and Recreation Department. But basically, it's an effort to combat stormwater pollution and just overall litter. So basically, it's a public program where just individuals and organizations can register for beach access and then are committed to cleaning on a regular basis. So I think this could be a really great thing that we can implement here in Curie Beach and maybe talk to Wrightsville Beach on how they organized it logistically and if there's still people involved.
Now, from my understanding, it's somewhat like what you see on the highways where somebody has adopted a section of the highway. And talking to one of the planning commissioners over there, when it was originally developed, I'm not sure if it's like this right now, it was actually a commitment by individuals or organizations for a section of the beach or the access to the beach where they would go down on a daily basis or a weekly basis and pick up the trash and clean it up and that sort of thing.
We have a working Adopt a Beach program.
Yes, we do.
It doesn't address, I don't know that it addresses the accesses, but the Beach and Shoreline Protection Committee has a working Adopt a Beach program.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great then.
But we also might want to think about...
You need to get in touch with the Shoreline Access Committee and talk to them.
Okay. Yeah. They are actually, because we're in transition with rebuilding our website as well, they are reviewing their program and updating some information out there as well. So that is going to be coming back on the website.
Okay. But we could also expand that to adopt other, not just the beach, but, you know, a group of people could adopt the park. A group of people could adopt the disc golf course, for example.
Right.
Because when I'm back there with my son, I do see trash. I mean, there is trash out there. People, you know, take the Coke cans and beer and they throw it in the bushes when they're playing frisbee golf. And some of that stuff stays around for a while. So I think it's more than just adopt a beach, because I think you're right. But, you know, adopt other sort of things where people are responsible for cleaning up some public areas.
Mm-hmm. So the next one, I was looking into more of like a comprehensive article about tree protection in North Carolina in general. So I think this could be potentially like a simple, maybe not like a text amendment to the zoning ordinance, but something where just encouraging, like if a tree needs to be removed, replanting trees, and just promoting, you know, the environmental benefits and how they improve water quality, you know, energy conservation, noise buffer, and just overall aesthetics. So I'm still looking into that article, but it seems like there's just, like you can have mandatory things that you require of the community or do more of an incentive-based type of thing. So that is that one.
Excuse me, hey John, is it? Are there anything in the regulations about cutting down trees now? Because I thought I heard one time if you got trying a live oak, you had to get special permission for it.
And there is a permitting process for this, sir.
So is the permitting process for removing certain types of trees now? We have.
Yes.
Okay.
And what type of trees are covered under that?
Live oaks are what's specified primarily, I think. Maybe some crepe myrtle or not crepe myrtle, but the other myrtles. But there's a caliper in size that goes along with that. Bottom line, I ask everyone that's cut down any trees in Curie Beach to get a permit.
Okay.
John, Wilmington just passed a new ordinance on this, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Tree removal. I got some pushback before.
There's a bunch of neighbors in around that area right down on Settlers and in the back. The pine beetles are raising havoc and they're killing the trees. There's not much you can do about it because there's nothing to kill them. At what point now are those trees are dying and they're dead? Is that the homeowners, if it's on their property, the responsibility to have it removed? Or?
Where are we talking about?
They're on private property.
They're on private property, right?
Yeah, it's on private property, but you can also see it's in the back, on the back side of where the Sunny Point owns it, the federal land. A lot of those trees are dying left and right. We've had two or three people already cut their trees down because if they don't, they kill a tree and then they jump over into another tree. So that would be the responsibility of the private owner of that property.
On their property, that tree is their responsibility.
Okay. Now you have a dead tree and just sitting there like that, cosmetically, does that present a problem for the town itself?
What, as far as getting a permit?
Yeah.
Or not, yeah.
On private property or on the...
Private property.
No, sir, I can't think of anyone ever really complaining about a dead tree.
Okay.
John, you know, related to the tree, one of our faculty members with a recent hurricane had an interesting situation that said that the tree was growing on the neighbor's property, okay, but there were branches extending into his property, and one of those branches fell down and did damage. And so the insurance company said that the owner that had the tree on the property was not responsible. Because he had the right to cut all the branches on his that were overhanging on his property, which would make the tree look pretty funny, obviously, with all the branches cut. But the fact that he did not do that is that he's liable then for any damage. I mean, is that your understanding of?
Yes, sir. Same way as if my tree fell into your house, it's your responsibility, not mine. Same damage.
Okay. Interesting.
Doesn't sound right.
What? It doesn't sound right. Yeah, it's.
Council's remaining silent on this.
That's what the insurance company said.
Yes, it's weird. There's some weird rules when it comes to trees. I found out where.
But the point of
anyway.
The point of this, as far as your presentation, is that we already have some in place. So. But
we could have maybe a tree planting type of effort where we could go plant more trees someplace if we want more trees. One thing we don't have is what I would call strong landscaping ordinance. I mean, we don't really have a landscaping ordinance, do we? I mean, the HOA has landscaping requirements, but I don't think the town has a landscaping ordinance.
I think that's 6 inches they can cut in your own.
Yeah, that's just cutting long, vacant for lots and all. Yeah. That'll do.
Yeah, but...
That's more of a nuisance.
The ordinances we have in place are more for nuisances.
Right.
More than anything.
But we don't require, like, buffing or hedging or, you know, that sort of thing when it comes to landscaping.
Not unless it's related with some kind of a buffer.
Right, okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, so the next one is energy conservation. So I pulled a lot of this from Cabarrus County's website. So they have a huge list of all the things they're doing in the town to promote energy conservation. And I thought this was particularly important because maybe not doing all the things that they're doing, but, you know, using energy efficient light bulbs and promoting the use of those, and then these, like, turn off the light stickers on the light switch plates. And also just talking about how, you know, using less energy also saves money. I think that's a good thing to promote, because it also saves money, but it can improve their quality and just the overall environment itself. And then they also have just a bunch of general tips on their website, and then more links to the Department of Environmental Quality and the EPA, which obviously has a lot more information. So that could just be something that could, I guess, be easily added to the website.
Has anybody done an audit of energy usage?
Not an audit, but we had, as far as our HOA, we replaced all of our lights on our signage when you come into Curry mm-hmm. Village. And I think the LED lights cost us like $300, and we paid for it like in 2 months. Okay. Our bill went down way over half. I mean, like a third.
I think there's already been
and
two
the
bulbs
other,
that burnt out.
Yeah, and the other thing is that that's been 3 years ago, and we've only had two bulbs burn out. So it's not only the energy saving, it's the replacement cost, because you've got a cool light source that it doesn't burn out.
One of the things about LED, which is starting to come out in terms of lighting, is that, and because I have this, I have very high sensitivity to the blue light spectrum, okay, where like this big digital billboard in Carolina Beach, I mean, it blinds me. When I drive, I actually have to put my hand up like that, because it literally blinds me. It's like somebody shining a flashlight, and that's because of the heavy blue light that comes out of that particular billboard. The digital one on the other side isn't as bad. It's bad, but it's you know, and then some of these really pump out a lot of blue light. So I would strongly recommend that if you do get LED lighting, you get some that are not in the blue light spectrum, that it's more in the red light spectrum. And actually, that is actually listed on the bulbs, you know, as to whether it's blue spectrum or red spectrum and that sort of thing. So like this is very high blue light spectrum right up here. And some of the headlights that are coming out to you right now are blue light spectrum too. And there are, I mean, actually can do damage to the eyes now. There's some research come out to show that, you know, LED lights and blue light spectrum can actually damage the eyes. So, you know, again, some things to think about.
That brings me to my next one, which was actually about LED lighting. So in Chapel Hill, they replaced a lot of lighting throughout the town with LED lights. And I looked more into it, and there's actually, I believe, some financing opportunities with energy.gov. So they have like some grant programs and some kind of rebate type of things. So that could be something to look into to replace, I guess, maybe some of the street lights. It seems like the lighting in here is obviously already, is it LED lighting in here?
No, that's fluorescent there.
Well, so they have fluorescent.
Fluorescent
LED.
And LEDs.
They have, I don't
know. Okay.
Most of the street lights have been switched to LEDs in Curry Beach already.
And it may end up being a new item, but at some point, whether it's related to this or elsewhere, I would really like to discuss light pollution ordinances and dark sky type regulations for overall.
That's what we were going to talk about too. It's that one of the LEED's recommendation to get points is that you have a lighting ordinance.
Yeah, there's an organization called Dark Sky that actually writes some extremely good documentation that I'd be interested in taking a look at.
Right. I think that's an excellent idea. And in fact, we even talked about that with the lighting for the rental place. Remember,
yeah,
we talked about
the golf cart place.
Yeah, the golf cart place. And I would, maybe we could put that on next month's agenda for the P&Z to talk about a lighting ordinance to deal with some of the pollution. You know, for example, and hopefully no one gets upset, one of the most polluting lighting in this town is the fire department. You know, when you look at the lights that are fronting the street right there, and it's just polluting, it's called a light trespass, actually, where the light trespasses from one property into another property, and you have a lot of light trespass going on with those lights right in front of the fire department. So I would 100% agree with you that, you know, that we definitely need a lighting ordinance to deal with light trespass and light pollution.
And I was going to say, I mean, since the town is already, it seems like, promoting some of these things, it would be, if we wanted to kind of do the LED, or not the LED, excuse me, the LEEDs kind of thing on our own, I think, just in a smaller scale, I think that would be kind of good to promote that, you know, hey, Curry Beach is already doing all these green type things, if it doesn't, you know, if that falls through. Because that's what it's with the LED lights already and things like that. Then, so my last one, if it will go. So there is this nonprofit called NC Green Power, and it offers participation to utility customers. So what they do is it's a voluntary contribution, but they support green energy all around North Carolina. So this could just be a really simple thing that could be implemented. And it says that they use carbon offset projects and providing grants for solar installations and things like that. So I just wanted to use this slide to talk about how there's a bunch of different like grants from the EPA and things like that that we could look into for just different type of things like that. I know last month I mentioned rain gardens, and I know maybe there could be a grant for something like that, because I know Raleigh had one at the fire station, for example.
And what's a rain garden?
It's just like a sustainable type of way to, it's like a stormwater type of
collection thing. Process, a stormwater mm-hmm. collection.
Actually, there's money that comes from the state to help people put those things in, because it goes through the we have a committee of the county soil and conservation and water, and they do that through that area. So there's a couple already set up in the county. Really?
There's what?
Down at Fish Front Park. That whole area is a rain garden.
Oh, okay. Can we get assistance to put rain barrels? I mean, it used to be that Curie Beach, didn't we have something where you could get them really cheap here at Curie Beach for rain barrels or something? I remember several years ago. Okay.
My newest solar energy, the $3 is for what? Kilowatt? Being generated by solar panels? You heard $3. Is that this per kilowatt hour? Or?
I'm not sure. I just pulled that from their.
Huh?
I just pulled that from their website, so I'm not sure.
Did we actually look at putting solar panels on this building here? Is there any consideration of that?
I don't remember if that was part of the same talks that we had when we were talking about the lead. I'm not sure.
But we talked about the actual park and the cost of set prohibited.
Definitely
talked
about it.
That we did talk about it a little bit, but.
I think we brought it up, but then
yeah.
The cost.
Well, yeah, the upfront costs is, I mean, the whole argument of LED panels, or not LED, but solar panels, is that there's a high capital cost now, but the savings are amortized over the 15-year life or the 20-year life or something like that, that you save money.
Can I comment?
Yeah, sure.
I work in this green energy field, and the challenge of solar panels is truly a first cost. Situation, but you have to look at the degradation of that. You don't get linear output
right.
in the life of a solar panel. Same. Then you basically are never going to have enough solar panels to generate the power consumption that you're going to need. So you either have to start looking at storage, which is costly. That's another expense because batteries aren't there to do the storage. So basically what a lot of people do is they do solar and it gets put back on the grid, why they don't,
mm-hmm.
and that's kind of where you pick up some of the savings. You put something back on the grid. So it does become a lot more expensive depending on what you're gonna do in your application for, you know, building like this. So does it make a, when you do a pro forma on it, does it work in a commercial application? We very rarely can ever find an application for that. Because what you get back when you put it on the grid, if Duke Power is charging 8 cents a kilowatt, they might give you 3.5.
Yeah.
Also, the life cycle cost of the batteries can be really.
If you do batteries, that's a whole other discussion.
That's really and, gets out of the.
I mean, you're 5 years into them. Yeah. Maybe you go with lithium batteries, then you really jump up the price.
If they don't explode.
Well, they shouldn't.
No. What's the insulation?
But it's not something that I would highly recommend. It becomes a token. You know, that's what some cities, you know, places we do is more of a token type application. But if you're looking at saving energy, I don't see it.
Uh, Okay, I had panels put on my house. The battery situation, more people are declining to do the battery because of the cost factor and the longevity of batteries. There's so many good incentives right now between the federal government and Duke Energy has a rebate program on the solar panel. I've reduced the cost of my panels more than half of what it costs.
But you're looking at two different types of applications, residential application and commercial.
Yes.
Applications are two different.
Two different things, yes. On the residential side of it, I'm saving over $100 a month.
I'm not saying that, but you know, when you start looking at it from a commercial spend and the pro forma of that and the life expectancy of the panels, you won't get your money back.
Well, I guess that's part of the being the green is that if it's a pure cost benefit, then everybody would do it.
Yeah.
So the fact is there's a cost associated with it, but the benefit then comes from being green, which is a cost, and I guess that's kind of the balance of why some cities do this and some don't. I don't think any of them are going to make money on it, you know. But you know, some do it because, as you call it, a token, but it's a token towards greenness, I think, which is, you know, what some citizens may want to have.
It depends on a lot of factors. You just can't look at it. I'm going to put solar panels on here and save a lot of money. You're going to use some of it, and you're going to put some of it back on the grid. And that's how you save your money. Mm-hmm. The savings that you reduce from generating your electricity and the excess gets put back onto the grid. You will never find enough appropriate space to collect enough energy to be 100% self-sufficient.
Oh, one of the things I think have you reached out to Duke at all?
I have not.
Okay, because Duke sends all of us LED for $5, and I didn't know if cooperating with a town or municipality, if they would say, hey, we'll come out and one day sponsor an LED light for the city or the town. So we'll have them here, and people can buy them for a dollar or whatever they do it for. So you may want to reach out to them and see if they have anything like that that would help spread the LED movement. So,
in fact, Duke may even have something where they'll come out and do kind of an audit
They
do it for a house, but they may come out for the whole town and look at the town and do an audit for energy savings.
Yeah. Maybe worthwhile checking.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you. I think that, you know, based upon what we heard, if we can make sure that our next P&Z agenda has a lighting ordinance discussion, if that's okay.
That's fine.
All right. All right. Rules of procedure, including provisions for remote participation.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm not going to go through all the things that we went through in previous meetings, and I did want to point out a couple of things. If you've got the draft, the PGC draft in front of you, if you go to page 2, this chase will change the fourth Tuesday to the correct day of the month. If you go to page, two things that I want to point out on page 3, we'll start at the bottom. Unlike the HPC, PCC members can participate and remotely can vote on all matters because there's no quasi-judicial going on. They're all reviewing reports. A very useful tool that I didn't point out in the first discussion is at the top of this page, 5.07, meetings recessed and adjourned to a time and place certain. You can extend a meeting to a date, place, and time certain by majority vote and avoid any further publication. I don't think you all have many public hearings, but consider a red button item public hearing where the room is filled with both sides to the issue. And even with the chairman dictating the rules of the public hearing, it's clear that not everybody will have a chance to participate. Let's assume further you have noticed that meeting through newspaper or legal classifications, which are cost a pretty penny. You can continue that public hearing by a motion and a majority vote that continues that hearing to a time, place, and date certain, and not have to re-advertise in the paper again. So it's a very useful tool for meetings that run over, particularly if they have expense associated with them. Those were the only changes. Those are the only highlights I wanted to point out in the PVC set of proposed rules. Otherwise, everything else is the same as we discussed in the previous meeting.
Are there any questions?
Motion to approve as amended.
Okay, is motion, is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Is there further discussion on this? Okay, hearing none, we'll go ahead and take a vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, excellent. Thank you. Next item is oath of office. Now I got it right. For Tony, as an alternate member.
I, and state your name.
I, Tony Garibay.
Swear that I will support and maintain.
Swear that I will support and maintain.
The Constitution and laws of the United States.
The Constitution and laws of the United States.
And the Constitution and laws of the state of North Carolina.
And the Constitution and laws of the state of North Carolina.
Not inconsistent therewith.
Not inconsistent therewith.
And that I will faithfully discharge my duties.
And I will faithfully discharge my duties.
As an alternate member of the Planning and Zoning Commission.
As an alternate member of the Planning and Zoning Commission.
For the town of Curry Beach, so help me God.
For the town of Curry Beach, so help me God.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yay! Nothing like getting free labor. We should put
that back on there.
Yes, yes, we'll do that. Let's talk about that back. I completely forgot about that. Yeah. I mean, we don't have a graffiti problem, but we should have ordinance.
We should have be prepared.
Beth, can we also put graffiti on next month's agenda too?
Yep.
Remember, we talked about that and kind of disappeared because we don't have a lot of graffiti here, but. Okay, next item on new business is discussion of Chapter 160D of the North Carolina General Statutes.
I'll take that, Chairman.
Okay.
Commission, my remarks are going to be kind of rambling on this one because I'm trying to accomplish several goals at the same time. The recent session of the North Carolina General Assembly made substantial changes to land development and approval statutes. And a lot of those affect you as a reviewing and reporting and advisory board to council on such matters. I'm talking a lot of changes. School of Government has issued a 28-page bulletin that is chock full of changes that are already effective, and perhaps even more importantly, will become effective a year from this January with respect to the fact that in addition to the changes that they made to existing statutes that are effective now, they have completely rewritten and added a new chapter of completely rewritten land development and approval statute. So it's a whole brand new ball game, brand new horizon. I'll give you just one example. It used to be that if a building inspector issued a citation or a member of the public received an interpretive ruling on the zoning regulations, administrative appeals, basically, you would take that to BOA, to the Board of Adjustment. One change that is now effective is that under certain criteria, if the person that's interested in appealing that citation or that interpretive ruling or the other things that constitute administrative appeals, if, for example, they think it's unconstitutional or equates with a taking, they can skip BOA and go directly to federal or state court. That's a major, major change that's going to have a major, major impact on budget, if nothing else. So these changes are important, and the current ones practically pale in comparison to the rewritten statutes, which will become effective a year from now. That's the first point. The second point is all those changes affect your functions as an advisory board on land development and approval applications. Therefore, it is proper for you all to be advised of and review those changes. You need to. They go in your toolbox, you need to know what they are. Third point, the current changes and possibly even more likely the changes that will be effective a year from now, I think it's clear, I think it's safe to assume will require amendments to Chapter 19. You have a question? Which is another reason for you all to get involved on the front end, because you're going to be reviewing and reporting likely changes to council for things that need to be changed now and things that need to be changed within the next year. I've barely scratched the surface myself in looking at these changes, mainly because I don't have that assignment for many of my clients at the present time. But I think that what I'm recommending is several things. I want this commission to authorize me to begin a regular review and advisory function to tell you of these changes and to tell you which ones require code amendments so that we can go ahead and engage in that process.
Can I just jump in there? That's a very good point. Obviously, we need to have somebody do that because it's going to affect not only this commission but also the town of Curie Beach, the city council, and everything like that. Obviously, your time is billable time. If we're talking about a substantial, and it does sound like a pretty significant effort to go ahead and look at this, I'm a little concerned that the town council authorize you.
Well, my point.
I mean, do you see what I'm saying? Is that, you know?
Let me go to my next.
Yeah.
Point.
Okay.
I think it's prudent for this commission to instruct me to begin a review process, but I think it's equally important because of the way this town is structured, and because there's two attorneys in this town, there needs to be clear. It needs to be clear. I think it's your all's function to jump in.
Right. No, I agree with that.
And I think you can instruct me, but I think it needs to be green-lighted by council. Right. So during the PZC reports to council, I think this matter needs to be brought up and recommended that PZC's attorney begin that process, since it's part and parcel of what you all do, and make sure council agrees with that. Council may be aware of this and may have a different approach in mind, but if we're going to do this, I want clear guidance and I don't want any confusion about who's doing what.
I 100% agree. What I will do is, at the next town council meeting, that'll be part of my report, and I'll ask for guidance from town council as to how to proceed with this.
And I assume you'll stress the fact that other than the magnitude of the project, it's simply a matter of scale. There's not much difference other than scale for PZC to be doing this process and reporting back to council on needed text amendments like we've done all along.
Right. If you could send me a paragraph that I could read to the council that would have the proper language and reference to the code and the new laws and that sort of thing, then I think that would be very, very useful.
And let me ask Ms. Avery two questions. When is the next council meeting? And has council taken any action with respect to these legislative changes?
Okay.
So it's appropriate, what the chairman is proposing is appropriate. If we're green-lighted to do this, it would be my recommendation that we add as a reoccurring item on the agenda for the next several months at least, legislative update and recommendations is what I would call it. But let me know what you find out, because it's important that we begin the process very quickly.
Would it make sense for you to be present at the next council meeting? You know, in case for let me ask our representative from town council here.
I would sure you'd be there. Yes.
Okay, all right. I think that would be good.
And if you, whatever email you send to Craig, you could just give me a note.
I read through this amendment when it was sent out, and it looks like it's very involved and something we need to be proactive.
Oh, no, I agree with you.
Let me just point out one thing with respect. Remember, there's two sets of changes, current and future. Let me tell you what the School of Government is going to do about the future. The informational website, on-demand training, explanatory book, regional workshops, conference sessions, annotated bill, checklist for ordinance update, crossover chart.
I'm just curious. why would the state do something that would push such a burden upon the local governments?
Who
actually wrote this thing? I can't believe there's a single legislator that would understand this. So obviously a lobbyist or somebody wrote this.
Now, the School of Government, it was a committee set up by the North Carolina Bar Association and the School of Government and land development approval attorneys. And they've worked on it for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, there you go. I think they identified it right there. So you identified it right there.
Mr. Chairman.
On the record, I know my objection.
Mr. Chairman, if you get a favorable response from council, he doesn't have to wait to the next meeting to start, right? He can pursue this.
Well, we can actually ask him to start the process, okay. I think, right now, okay. Because that's within, I think, our budget. But I think to go beyond that requires council.
Okay. What I envision as a first step is a very, very generalized review, maybe even bullet listing without going into detail, current changes, referencing the future changes, just kind of laying out the scope. But the process itself, if we're green-lighted to do it, is going to be comprehensive, long-term, and I can't think of the right word, piece by piece.
Right. And you will be present if you can be at the town council. So you'll get immediate feedback in terms of the authorization that the council provides.
That's good. Okay. That's what I wanted. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Good.
So do we need a motion to authorize him to start?
To start the process? Yeah. I'll go ahead and make that motion. Okay. To go ahead and start the process of investigating, as well as plan on attending the council meeting.
I'll wholeheartedly second that.
Okay. Yeah. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Okay. Any member items? Or no, actually, we have new business. In terms of technically, we should probably talk about our January and December meetings again for this, because it is a separate entity. And I think we agreed, and I would recommend that we meet for December.
December 4th.
December 4th, and at that time, we make a decision about our January meeting.
Agreed.
Okay.
Agreed.
All right, any other member items?
We're adding light ordinance and graffiti discussion.
Graffiti discussion as agenda items.
Right. And legislative update.
And legislative updates.
Legislative update.
Okay. Sounds like it's going to be a longer meeting.
Okay.
So, all right. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
So moved. Is there a second?
Yep. Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye.